Welcome, everybody, to The Trip Show, the Third Realm Integration Podcast, where our unconscious minds meet and the transformation begins. I am your host, Megan Kenny, transpersonal therapist and owner of Third Realm Integration, as well as Third Realm Studio on Etsy. Feel free to check that out. I will include links to the website, to the Etsy shop, to the YouTube page, and maybe the social media platforms right here in the notes below. So check that out. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that today and what you'll be able to find on the Etsy shop in particular. And by the way, reach out to me, send me an email, info@thirdrealmintegration.com. If you want to purchase what I'm putting up on the Etsy shop, but you want access to the discount code. And I'll explain all of that in a second. But today, we're going a little deep today. So if today's topic is a little too dense and you're just like, okay, I don't know what she's talking about, just hang in there because I'm going to lighten this up as I go. But the reason why I want to start with sort of a dense topic today is because it's the inspiration for why I named my program The Third Realm. What The Third Realm means, where I got the inspiration, and what material I pulled from to get the inspiration to actually come up with that name, and how it aligns with the heart-centering practice that I do. So, here's what I want to break down. Today's a little bit of an educational and informative episode on a topic like we're going to do on every episode, but a topic relative to depth psychology and transpersonal psychology. What is the third realm? What does that mean? Third realm integration. Okay, explain that. Where did you come up with that? Here's where I came up with it. I was reading an article a few years back by a psychotherapist in private practice in New York City and Princeton, New Jersey. His name is Nathan Schwartz-Salant, and I will include the link to the article below here so you can check out his work. He's actually written, I haven't read some of his other work, but it definitely sounds interesting. He has one called Narcissism and Character Transformation, and he has another called The Borderline Personality, Vision and Healing. He's also the He's also the president of the Salant Foundation and director of the Center for Analytical Perspectives. He's a PhD Jungian analyst and trained in Zurich, the mecca of Jungian analytical psychology. So, sounds like he knows what he's doing here. Sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and I kind of dig it. I read this article. It was assigned to me in a course that I was taking, and it's called On the Interactive Field as the Analytic Object. So if you guys have studied psychology, if you know the subject-object theory, I'm not going to get into all of that. It highlights what the role of the, I'm just going to call, instead of analyst, I'm going to call therapist and client, or coach and client, practitioner and client. That basically ends up being the foundation for how to understand what the interactive field actually is, or the third realm, or the third area, or the third space, or the field, all of these different words that are used to describe what this third realm process or space in which the process takes place actually is. All right, now before I get into the density of the actual research here, not that this is empirical research, this is not a study that has been done. This is a clinical piece written by somebody. I have to bring in the fact that the technique that I use for myself when I'm sitting with clients, and then I don't teach this to everybody. I probably introduce it to every client that I've ever worked with. I've probably introduced this to, but it's not always something that people can really grasp, which is why I actually incorporate a lot of other techniques in my actual therapeutic work that I take clients through. This one is the mecca though. Like, this is the bread and butter of the work. And if you can do this, and if you're interested in doing this, and if this speaks to you, this is where I sort of guide people to go. And this is the meditation that I'm going to actually have up on Etsy from beginning to end, the whole package deal of how you actually do the heart-centering technique that I use. Now, this is how it connects to the third space or the third realm. When I, as the provider, drop into the heart, center myself into the heart space of heart coherence, which is backed by research done by the HeartMath Institute, amongst many others. There's a real healing process within the body and in the system that begins psychologically and biologically, physiologically, when you drop into the heart space. It actually creates a rhythm in the body where the mind, or the brain activity, the brain waves, and the rhythm of the heart become in sync. And no, not like the Justin Timberlake pop band that was one of my favorite bands of all time. Thank you very much. No, not in sync like that. Like in sync, like in step, linked up, coherent, not incoherent, not chaotic and fragmented and staticky, which is where we are when we are in emotional reactivity, when things trigger us, when we are traumatized by something, meaning we experience a devastating event, and then we have the rebound reactivity symptoms that go on and on and on that then turn into a diagnosis like PTSD. That's when we're in a space of incoherence. HeartMath has actually done a lot of research to show that people that practice this heart-centering technique don't become traumatized by otherwise traumatic experiences. It's kind of like Gabor Mate talking about that it's not the event is not the trauma. It's how you respond to the event that dictates the trauma and whether or not the trauma is there. And that's how you explain how some people can go through a really devastating experience and they bounce back really quickly. They don't have everlasting reactive responses in the emotional way to the event. They kind of just carry on. It's like, yeah, well, that was a tough experience, but I'm okay today. And it's not locked up in the body and it's not locked up in the psyche that then causes further emotional reactions that make it difficult to function. When you practice the heart-centering technique, you build up the resiliency. You increase that window of tolerance to be able to tolerate discomfort and then be able to fit a lot more in there, into that window. You increase the capacity. Well, I can handle a lot more now than I ever have before. Before somebody said that one thing to me and I would have just been spinning and then dwelling on it and ruminating about it, I would have had a panic attack. It would have gone on for weeks and months. Now we're shifting out of that traumatized, wounded space and we're moving into the space of stillness. We're moving into the observer state. We're coming into a space where those hooks can come in, but they don't stay. And it just keeps moving. And yes, we are in the presence of chaos. And yes, we are in the presence of all sorts of things that otherwise would put us into a deeply emotionally reactive state. But when you're in the heart center and you have exercised your own capacity to drop into a space of heart coherence, you now really, it's not even like I would say like, oh, you've become Teflon. Things just bounce off of you and you kind of like have a thicker skin. Yeah, I guess you could say that, but it's kind of not even that. It's kind of the opposite of that. Things aren't bouncing off of you. You're not repelling things back out. You're actually allowing the difficult experiences or the intense energy that's beyond you, the chaos. You're in a state of chaos. Chaos is around you. It's moving into you and moving through you and not staying stuck. It's like you're a glass container. You're a vessel that is clear, crystal clear, and no cobwebs, nothing for anything to get stuck to or cling to on its way through. It moves through you, it moves out of you. It moves through, it moves out, it moves through, it moves out. That's the shamanic path, because now you have already gone through your initiation crisis of experiencing pain and suffering. And now you realize that there is an opportunity here where you can actually build up your own level of resiliency to walk into that chaos and not even be affected by it. The shaman takes in the illness, doesn't get sick, goes back to the tribe and is vibrating at a higher frequency, a higher energetic vibration in which they can carry the suffering of that illness, not get sick by it, and then heal the actual tribe or the collective. Very powerful. So as the therapist, when you're sitting in the space, when you're in the heart, you're able to be present with the client's suffering out of a space of compassion, not a space of empathy. Big difference. Empathy is actually a narcissistic construct. Yes, I hate to break it to you guys. All of you empaths out there identify as, like, you know, the healers and the people that, like, can feel other people's pain. That's a wonderful thing. That's also a very strong aspect of narcissism, just a less obvious one, because it actually is about your pain in that moment. You're only feeling that other person's pain based on your subjective perception of that person's pain. You don't really know if that person's actually in the pain that you think they're in. But because your pain gets activated and you're like, I know that feeling. I know what it means to actually be homeless and on the street and suffering. So I'm going to go over and give that person money because I know that pain. And like my teacher describes in her book, and I'll get to that in a second, that's your own guilt, actually, that's getting projected out, which is why you go over to that person and hand that person money. It's because of you. It's because of the discomfort that you feel seeing that person suffer the way you think they're suffering, when they actually might be holding that suffering way better than what you're giving them credit for. You're actually victimizing them by having the empathy, because you're saying that they're not actually capable of holding the suffering that they're in right now. But they look like they're holding it pretty well. Maybe you wouldn't be able to pull it off living on the street and having to panhandle every day and figure out where your next meal is going to come from. But maybe they're doing a pretty damn good job at it. And maybe there's something really outstanding that they are gaining from that experience, walking through that suffering. Maybe that's their shamanic initiation crisis. And then maybe through that process, they're going to learn something and benefit in a way that you could never imagine. Who are we to take away that person's suffering, assuming that it's going to break their soul and their psyche and prevent them from reaching their full potential? Maybe the exact way that they're going to reach their full potential is by walking through that suffering and walking that path that we don't even have the ability to tolerate looking at. So think about that. Empathy is your unhealed suffering that gets projected out into the person that you're looking at. Now, is that a bad thing? Not really. I mean, if this whole world had more empathy, we'd actually be in a pretty good space. The next level, though, is compassion. Because compassion is when you're able to be in that third realm. Be present in your own heart. Be still in the presence of somebody else's suffering. And not try to step in and save them from it. Seeing the value of what that suffering brings in that moment. Not getting triggered by your own discomfort of your own unhealed wounds to then have to be the rescuer and then rob somebody of the opportunity to really grow through their own pain. That's where the empathy is narcissism, and that's where compassion and compassionate boundaries empowers people. Empathy can victimize somebody and weaken somebody psychologically. Compassion empowers. That's the difference. So when you're in the third realm, you're present with that other person suffering, not feeling the need to fix it, just aligning with it, being the hooks of your own suffering have been released, so you don't have this egoic reaction to try to change it or fix it. You're just merely sitting with the person in the presence of their own suffering. You're just holding their hand while they're there. And that's a powerful experience. Now, to get into the more technical, sort of dense, nitty-gritty aspects of what the third realm actually is, it really is a field of energy that is beyond our sight. So the ingredients that make up the third realm is my personal consciousness, so my ego, my reactivity to things, my opinions, my need to grab for power here or feel good enough there. All of that stuff, the client's personal consciousness, so all of that stuff for them, their everyday stuff, all of the stuff that causes us to be reactive and feel all kinds of things, where our emotions come from. Then we have the collective unconscious, which is what Jung talked about, is the objective space. So we go subjectivity, so my subjectivity, client's subjectivity, our opinions, our biases, combined with the elements of both of our unconscious minds, which is where the freedom actually lives, which is why I am always focusing on the aspects of the unconscious mind. It's the eruption of the unconscious mind when we are not conscious of it that causes us to walk around like reactive robots, even. probably a bad metaphor. Robots, today, I don't know, but this whole AI movement coming out with these, like, villainous robots. So, I don't know if you guys saw the story. There was a little boy in a chess tournament in Russia, and he was playing chess against a robot, and the robot arm, like, wasn't obviously capable of seeing that the little boy's hand was actually on the chessboard. He put his hand on the chessboard sooner than the robot, like, expected or anticipated, or was programmed to expect and anticipate, and it broke the little boy's finger. It came down on his finger, and then, like, the whole crowd of people was, like, running around to try to get the robot off the kid's finger. Like, oh my god. So maybe robots do have emotions. I don't know. But for the sake of the metaphor, let's forget about the robot idea. Your unconscious puts you in a reactive state. You're walking around all day as just one emotional reaction, and you're not even aware of it. And then as a result, the projections come out, and you blame this person, you blame that person. It's that person's fault as to why this went bad. It's that person's fault as to why this went bad. It's the president's fault as to why we're in this mess. It's this one's fault. Okay. Tons of projections everywhere. Now, I'm not going to get too deep into projections, because the point of a projection too is that whoever you're projecting onto, there's some element of that person that also fits the projection. So a projection is not always a delusion. Whoever you're projecting onto is also energetically playing the game with you. It's like two pieces of a puzzle that come together. I won't get into politics, but you see this play out in politics very, very, very well. It's a great landscape to practice how to spot projections and what is coming from people's unconscious minds. So when you're not conscious of your own unconscious patterns that are getting projected out, and in my work, I talk about two. Both are fears. Fear of being powerless and out of control. That's the father. That comes from the father wound or the father archetype. And we may even say just masculine energy in general. And then we have the fear of not being good enough and not having any value. That's the mother wound. And we can also say that's an expression of feminine energy. And so we have these two primary wounds that get activated from our unconscious mind all the time. The more conscious we become of them, the more insight we have to be the observer and the witness, which is where we're going when we drop into the heart, and then be able to influence that. So the more conscious we become, the more consciously evolved we become as a collective, the further we progress. And the less reactivity we have and the more still we become, and actually, frankly, the easier life gets. So in the third realm, we have my subjectivity, your subjectivity. We have the unconscious realm, which is the space of objectivity, where really everybody is the same. Every mind really operates with this level of the unconscious, which is where all of the patterns and symbols and archetypes live. That's like anybody that knows about Akashic Records. This is like the vault of the past, present, and future, all in the space at the same time, where time actually doesn't exist. Doing deep work on your unconscious mind from Jung's perspective of the collective unconscious, which is a very dense concept. I'm probably really not even doing it any justice at this point, because I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Feel free to go read deeper into what the collective unconscious actually is and how Jung described it. This is what you're trying to awaken to heal. You want to go into the unconscious, both your personal unconscious and the collective unconscious, which is the collective of all of us as human beings. Where those two wounding patterns, fear of being powerless and out of control, fear of not being good enough, live, because we all have those two patterns. And that's the simplest way to deduce down what our unconscious patterns are as a collective of human beings, no matter who we are, where we're from, and what our paths have been. And so when the therapist or the provider can consciously play in a space in which they know that all of those parts exist, and then my perspective is that they get there by dropping into the heart, where everything becomes still. And there is no reactivity from that provider in that space. They don't have an agenda. It's not their ego driving the boat here. They can now straddle the line of the two worlds, the visible and the invisible. They have one foot in the unconscious realm, and they have one foot planted in the conscious realm. and they are able to straddle the line. And they do that because they're in the heart and they're able to see from the observer perspective the whole aerial view of the dynamics between themselves as the provider and the client and the client's reactions to them and their reactions to the client and the whole soup that makes up that whole space. They are consciously aware of their own previous unconscious projections that go in the direction of the client, and they are seeing it all. It's a bit of a like detached kind of place, but you're not detached. You're still. You're not numb and dissociative. You're still. And you're able to see the whole picture. You're tapping into your own physical sensations that come up. This is where the intuition starts to build. HeartMath did a research project specific to heart intelligence and how it's actually heart intuition. You're actually knowing things before they actually happen. Their studies actually back this up. It's wild. Check out the book called Heart Intelligence by HeartMath. I mean, I really couldn't even. I've been doing this work for a long time. I've known about HeartMath for a long time. When I picked up the book recently, though, and just decided to actually read all of their research in one place, I couldn't even put the book down. Outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. And then my teacher's book, in which she actually talks about how you can combine all of these parts together and integrate your own suffering patterns through accessing the heart, is called Apocalypse of the Mind, Dr. Melissa Lowe. This, and that's a dense read too, so you kind of have to pull all of these pieces together and just, you're either ready to kind of take this in, your mind is either open to this right now, you know, or it's not. But nonetheless, even if you're not at a place to digest all of this now, you're not a depth psychologist, this material like plants seeds, I think, for us to kind of revisit when the time is right. So the therapist straddling that line between the visible and the invisible world actually helps that client move out of the wound of emotional reactivity and to meet the therapist in the space of that objectivity, of the heart space, the heart intelligence, the wisdom of the heart, by being still in the presence of all the pain and suffering, which now transforms the pain and suffering. Recognizing that when the therapist can move through these many different realms here, and then the third realm ends up being the container that holds all of it. The third realm now has its own consciousness. It's now its own entity, and it influences the therapist and the client, in which all of these parts together interact. Also called the interactive field. It transcends the wounds. And as long as the therapist can maintain groundedness through that process, all they have to do is be in the heart when they're in the presence of the client. I focus a lot on techniques and stuff, and yeah, that's great. I think that kind of creates a structure to the work. That's not where the healing happens. It's the third realm where the unconscious minds meet and the actual transformation begins. That's no joke. I came up with that line because I read this article, synthesized all this data in my mind, came up with the term third realm and was like, this is what it is. And then you move into the space of wholeness, because now that third realm has its own qualities to it that has been made up of all of these individual qualities that the therapist and the client bring together, and it all goes in as ingredients in the soup. And then it's its own thing. Then you move into the space of wholeness. And the whole process of transformation begins. Like Jung talked about, the opposites. Light, dark. Conscious, unconscious. Up, down, you know, father, mother, whatever it is, masculine energy, feminine energy. And then it all comes together. It's the union of the opposites, the conjunctio, if I'm saying that right, the alchemical process that Jung talks about. And that's what it is. It's when the two worlds come together in a space of a center. The unconscious mind and the conscious mind can come together in union as long as full clarity is present to be able to see all of it. Like Ram Dass says, you can only love what you know is there. You can only integrate what you know is there. It starts with awareness. Becoming aware of your own unconscious processes, projections, and patterns, And then it's like, oh, that's what I'm doing. Oh, that's why I'm reacting to that person this way. Oh, that's why I'm having this experience right now. That ties back to this. Huh. Starting with awareness of what your own projections actually are is how you get to this place. And then you see it all, you bring it together, and then you create a union between the two. And however you create the union, really, it depends on the person. For me, though, and if the way I've been taught, it's by accessing the heart intelligence and the heart wisdom, working through the heart, grounding myself into the heart, opening up the space of compassion, knowing that that frequency, that energy in my body that comes from the heart is the vibration that I need to be in order to heal myself and heal people as long as I am in the presence of them in that heart space. Then it doesn't matter what happens after that. It really doesn't. Like some people, I'll work with people and they'll be like, okay, what do I do about this one situation? How do I figure this out? What am I supposed to do? And I'm not saying you'll come up with this answer overnight. This is a practice. This is cumulative. This takes time. With practice, it builds on itself and builds on itself, and then it strengthens, and then it becomes easy to just say, boom, drop into the heart. And from there, you're in the space of objectivity. You've released your attachments to the outcome. You're now okay with however any of it goes. This world could end tomorrow. And guess what? As long as you're working through the heart, in my opinion, or you have found a way to create what I'm describing here, you will be fully supported into the end of the world. So it doesn't matter. You're going to be just fine either way. And you're going to be operating from your highest self, regardless of what destruction comes next. None of it's going to matter. Because you're fully supported by your own inner healer through the process, which is the heart. And as the provider, working with clients, the third realm is where the magic happens. It's how the wounded healer shows up to actually guide the process. And the client's either going to follow you, speaking to my therapists right now, providers, coaches, doctors, the client's either going to follow you or they're not. They're either energetically and vibrationally aligned with what your energy is, or they're going to run for the hills. In all of it's all good. Everything's great about that because whatever direction it goes is where it needs to go. And, you know, when people are kind of stuck in a really dark space, they're carrying a lower vibration naturally. Negative thoughts carry its own vibration. And there has to be, who knows? Maybe this is where the metaphysical realm actually comes in. But, you know, two vibrational energies really have to line up in order for the synchronicities to actually begin to happen, for the magic to actually begin to happen, and for the sync to actually happen. So if somebody's operating at a low vibration and then somebody's operating at a high vibration, it may be that they can come together, but it may be that they actually repel each other like two opposing magnets, not the sides that sync up, but the sides that fully repel. And so that work is either, and so the container can either hold the space for that work, where all of that can be worked out in the space, in the container, or it'll separate and people will go their separate ways. And that's the beauty of the work, is because this calls into clarity where the work actually is. So I encourage anybody who's in the healing space to really think about this. Think about how you sit with people that need your support. What is going through your body and what is going through your mind when you're in the presence of somebody else's suffering? Even if you're not a healer, like the example I gave earlier, when you drive by somebody who you see suffering, what reactions do you have? Pay attention to that. You know, and this is actually wild because this goes back to a class, a sociology class that I took in undergrad, in which my professor was like trying to make this argument that when we do good things for other people, that it's not a selfish process, that it's just, you know, can we get to the place of like just doing good for other people just to do good? And I was like, yeah, but that's not how most people operate. Most people are giving a charity or giving money to a person who's homeless on the street, or doing something for somebody else because it makes them feel good. That's really where the majority of the collective actually operates. the Buddhist philosophy is that we do good just for the sake of doing good with expecting nothing in return. That's why, like, you know, it's always so funny to me when people say, like, yeah, I'm a therapist. It's a thankless job. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Why did you get into this work in the first place? Did you get into this work to be thanked? Is that why you came here? Because if that is why you came here, yeah, you're going to burn out real quick, because that's not why we're even supposed to be here, frankly. You're in the wrong work. If you're doing kind things for other people and you're mad that nobody's appreciating you for it, you have some work to do on yourself. That might not be the work for you right now, that you might have to leave that work, do some deeper work on yourself, and then return if that's where you're called. But the idea of compassion is that you're just doing goodness. You're just being in the presence of somebody suffering just because. And you're not looking for something in return. So that's one way to start thinking about, like, okay, what patterns of mine are operating in a way that keeps me stuck and keeps me in the empathic space versus the compassion space? I know that was a little deep. We kind of went for a ride there. But I think the goal is that none of the density of this stuff actually really matters. I wanted to sort of introduce this as the first episode, just based on the name of my program, just so people can get a sense of, like, what is the heck she even talking about? What is this whole thing about? What is this woo-woo, you know, science here? It's so not woo-woo. And I say that because it's probably a little bit of a wound of mine, is coming from the clinical psychology licensure kind of realm of the licensed therapist that, like, only want to work with evidence-based practices and all this hullabaloo. Like, unless there's research and there's a study that fits all of these criteria, then it doesn't work. It's like, oh God, ego, holy ego. Oh my God. So this stuff starts to sound woo-woo to those people, because they're just not in a space to be able to appreciate all of what is unseen and unknown. The point is that if we funnel this into a grounded structure of working through the heart, you don't even have to know all of this stuff. You just have to trust and have faith that you are being held and supported by your own heart's wisdom, your own inner power. And that inner power comes from being able to integrate the fear of being powerless. You actually get stronger by going into the space of being powerless in order to gain your power. It's through the surrender. It's letting go of the fight. You don't have to do all the things. You actually have to do less. Like the Buddhists say, it's the state of inaction that gets you to thrive, not the action. Not, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do all these things. No, you don't. Maybe you do, but the mind is driving you to say and make all these rules that I have to do these things. I'm not going to be okay unless I get this done and this done and this done, and then I'll be able to have peace of mind. No, start with the peace of mind first. Release your attachments to all the things that you feel like you need to do. Then let your heart guide the way. And from a heart-centered, heart consciousness place, then you'll just move with it. It's just, life becomes easy. There's an ease and a flow to it. There's not an overworking. You're letting go of the drive that says, I need to do these things, because it comes from the wound of either not being good enough and having any value. And so therefore you're only valuable if you're the best partner, the best employee, the best parent, whatever. Which you'll never, that's an illusion. Buddha would call that an illusion. There's no such thing. You're telling yourself, if I do these things, I'll be the best at this and then I will be good enough. That doesn't work. You're still on the hamster wheel, and frankly, you'll never get off if that's the perspective that you have. It's about letting go and saying, Can I actually drop into a space of being powerless and not being good enough? Can I hold the space for that through the heart? Let the heart hold me so I can go into that space and have that not further re-traumatize me. Can I hold that pattern? And if I hold that pattern from the heart, that's where the power comes from. That's the surrender. That's where the transformation happens. And when the therapist can help the client get there by the therapist doing that themselves, all of that comes together. That's the third realm. So keep in mind that the heart centering is the magic of what is going to bring you to this place. You can go online. You can check out YouTube videos on the HeartLock technique. The HeartMath Institute has put together some videos. Even they have actually a free series as to how to get acclimated to this work. And then I've been trained through my teacher to actually add on a second piece to it. And that is you drop into the heart, you establish the heart coherence, and then you start working through your own patterns by bringing in the image in the mind's eye of the image or event or the feeling state that represents the pattern that you're trying to integrate. And that's how you do the work. And you connect heart center to heart center from your physical body to the image that you're holding in your mind that holds the vibration of the wound that you're trying to integrate. And so I'm going to put this together and I'll do it my version of it. And I'll put it together as an audio guided meditation. And this is the bread and butter of the work. This could, and frankly, if you want to really release yourself from these hooks of your unconscious mind and your own projections, and you want to commit to this work, not that I'm saying that that's what everybody needs to do or should do. There is no, I'm not gonna, you know, we don't need to should all over ourselves here, as I like to say. Let go of the should. There's like no such thing. If you want to do this, it will be available on my Etsy shop. And I'm not looking to make any money off of this. I'm setting it for $3.33 just because I like the three numbers of the threes. But reach out to me. Send me an email. info@thirdrealmintegration.com. I'll send you a discount code. You'll pay like a dollar for it or something. I just want to keep track of how many I'm putting out and people that are actually using the meditation. And eventually you get to a place where you don't actually have to sit down and do a meditation with this. This is a walking meditation. This is in real time. Boom. I'm having a reaction. Drop into the heart. Release the hooks. Or I'm getting ready to do a speech, to give a presentation, to go do something that is anxiety provoking. Boom. Drop into the heart right before I go. Center myself. And then the second piece where you actually begin to integrate the wounding pattern, like I said, you bring in the image of something that holds the vibration of that wounding pattern. You do that when you're alone. You do that when you are able to be fully and completely vulnerable, where you can allow tears to flow and energy to move, and it's all okay. There's nobody around you. I've had people that want to try to do this meditation like with their friends or in a group or with their partner. No. That's a hard no for me. You do not do that aspect of the meditation in the presence of other people. That is a deeply intimate, deeply personal experience that you do by yourself or with your teacher. Okay? Just want to put that out there. That's a very important piece. And you don't do the wounding part before you have to step into your full power, because you're actually trying to go into your powerlessness and into the wound. So you want to be fully vulnerable. I don't want you going into like a board meeting and sobbing because you're in the space of the wound and the vulnerability. So you don't drop into the wound and integrate the wound prior to having to kind of like show up and pull on your inner hero. You do that when you can fully let go. Fully let go. And so I'm going to put there. So essentially there are two parts to the meditation. There's the heart coherence, just dropping into the heart and establishing the coherence, which you can do anytime. That's what you do before you have to walk out into the world and do whatever it is that you're going to do, or in response to an emotional reaction that you're having. And then the second part of the meditation is beginning to integrate the wounds, and you do that solo. But I'm going to put it together as one meditation, and you can stop the audio halfway through if you just want to use the first part, but I want to package it together as one. So that's going to be available. It should, by the time this episode comes out, it should already be up. Go to Third Realm Studio on Etsy. I'll link it below, and feel free to reach out to me for the discount code. What else did I want to say? I'm also going to be adding to the Etsy shop over the next couple months. I'm working, like I had said in the teaser, I'm working on a research project, and I'm incorporating astrology and a cosmological archetype of an asteroid called Chiron. And this is the mythological story of the wounded healer. So it actually ties in a lot to what I just talked about today. But I'm not going to get too dense into that material. I will be talking more, though, about the Chiron archetype, the wounded healer archetype, how this shows up in our everyday lives, how we can find it in our birth chart to get sort of a little bit of a sense as to how it's expressing itself in our lives and in what areas of our lives. And over the next few months, I'm going to start cultivating a way to do Chiron readings, Chiron natal chart readings for people that want an astrological reading on the way that the wounded healer archetype is showing up in their lives. And then I'm going to combine it with the meditation also. So stay tuned for that. Check out the Etsy shop to learn more about that. But I do encourage you guys, if the wounded healer sounds appealing to you, and that does not mean that you just have to be in the healing profession. There is a healer in all of us. Whether we heal other people or whether we aim to heal ourselves, it's all part of the same energetic cord. Because frankly, when you begin to heal yourself in this way, you actually begin to heal the people around you. I'll go into more of the research around that, which HeartMath also put together. It's called Social Coherence. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. Check out the website for my services, thirdrealmintegration.com. Feel free to email me with any questions. If you're interested in becoming a new client, click on the new client link. You can fill out that form, email it to me, and we can get started. You can also check out the Instagram page at thirdrealmintegration and Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Check out the YouTube channel. I'm going to be putting a lot of other meditations on the YouTube channel, not the tried and true heart-centering kind of front to back, but some of the other meditations that I do, energy clearing, and I have a third eye chakra meditation up there now, and I think I have a part of the heart-centering up there, but I'll be putting together some stuff, so you guys check it out. Oh, and also, I don't know where you're listening to this episode on, but if your friends are interested in the show, but they like a different podcast platform than the one that you're listening to me on right now, feel free to let them know. We are literally on every platform. iHeartRadio, Spotify, Audible, Samsung Podcasts, Google, Apple shortly. It's like the podcast world has changed a little bit since I've been out of it for the last like year or so. A lot easier to get your stuff published on multiple platforms. So check out those other platforms if those are your go-to podcast listening platforms. And yeah, that's it. I think I will just leave it there. All right, everybody. Stay wild, stay free, and may the light always lead the way. Be well, everybody. Bye for now. Third Realm Integration Podcast and related content is intended to provide information and or entertainment only and is not a substitute for mental health or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Do not delay mental health or medical consultation or substitute a mental health or medical professional's opinion because of what you heard on this show. Seek the advice of your physician or another qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a mental health or medical condition. The host of this podcast does not provide emergency support for mental health or medical issues. For questions or concerns, visit your local emergency room or contact your doctor.